Hello, everyone, and welcome into another edition of the Front Office brought to you by Royal Farms, home of the world's greatest chicken, the area's best tasting coffee, and home of some of the most awesome deals on their Western fries. It's Friday at ROFO through April 30th. That's Friday, F-R-Y, for their Western fries. I'm Tony Lombardi, and I'm joined on the Front Office each week by Brian McFarlane. Brian, it's only been 1 week since the new league year started, and it feels like a month.
For sure, for sure.
Especially for you, right?
Yes, absolutely. It feels like every time I get numbers together, something else changes. So, yeah, kind of crazy.
But before we get into the Ravens cap situation and a few deals that have happened since we last talked, I wanted to ask you, have you watched The Dynasty on Apple TV?
I have not. No, I have not had a chance yet.
I'm telling you, you will fly through it. The episodes are like 33, 35 minutes long. Ron Howard and Brian Glazer are behind it. It's so well done. It talks about things in Brady's career I didn't know about, his relationship with Belichick, relationship with Kraft, Kraft's power in the NFL. It goes into Spygate, Deflategate, the Aaron Hernandez situation and ultimate demise, and some Super Bowl insights that I thought were really, really cool to watch. And you don't have to be a Patriots fan. They kind of did it in a way that was full disclosure. It's totally transparent with all the warts and everything else showing. And Belichick comes off as Darth Vader. I mean, he really doesn't come off well at all.
Well, that I mean I'm not surprised in a way. I mean, that he kind of feeds into that persona himself a little bit, I guess, but he's, you know, he's old school, and as long as you're winning, that you know, works. You
Right.
Can do that. I mean, you look at your, you know, Bill Parcells is your Bobby Knights, you know. But when you stop winning, it becomes harder for people to put up with that.
And some of the players that they interview, you get the feeling that actually all the people that they interview, the even Kraft, you feel like, you know, they sided with Brady. But it's really interesting. I don't want to take any thunder away from the show, but it's definitely a binge watch. Apple drops things. They drop two episodes initially for a new series, and then they drop, I think, the others two at a time for a week. But now that it's all been dropped, you can just binge right through it.
Yeah, I'll have to do that soon for sure.
Yeah, it's a fun watch. So anyway, I wanted to start our conversation today with the Matabike deal that you discovered had some nuances to it that weren't reported initially.
Yeah, when the initial reports came out, and I know where they came from, but the NFLPA does these little contract summaries that agents that are available to agents and therefore some in the media. And the initial one only had it as a straight 4-year deal. And I've seen that little report. So either the agent or whoever entered it in for the agent forgot to add the void years, which is what I discovered. I'm not sure, you know, or whether it was somebody at the NFLPA that just entered. I don't know how exactly those things are entered. I assume the agents just do it, or somebody in their office does it. So all the initial reports were a straight 4-year deal. At that time, when it was first announced, I did on Twitter question whether they might have added a fifth year, a void year in the fifth year, because you can spread signing bonuses out over 5 years. And it would make sense in that case to add that year, because with four-year deals are kind of short for the NFL these days, especially for big money deals like these. Usually they're at least five, again, because you can spread that bonus out. So as it turns out, once the numbers actually hit into the NFLPA system, it turns out that they did actually add two void years, which in a way makes sense, because now we also know that there is a $15 million option bonus to next year. So that they added the sixth year, which would allow that option bonus in 2025 to prorate again over 5 years. So both the initial signing bonus and then next year's option bonus The signing bonus was 25 million this year, so that prorates 5 million a year for the first 5 years. And then the option bonus, the $15 million option bonus paid next year, will pray also prorate over 5 years starting next year and through 2029. For that helps them less than the initial cap numbers in the first couple years. We get back to the issue with void years, though, and that is in 2028, there will be $11 million in dead money on the cap. Now, I assume the hope is that they've extended him before then, which will spread that money out a little more. But also, I mean, who knows in 2028? I mean, that 11, I mean, I hate to say $11 million is, you don't want any dead money, obviously, but part of that is just doing business. It is what it is. But if the cap keeps going up, $20 million the next, then we're well over 300 million, and that 11 probably doesn't hurt as much, so to speak, as it would sound today.
Now, since you uncovered the details of Madvike's deal, a couple of deals have happened with the Ravens, not to this level, of course, but one of which was Arthur Millette. He signed a 2-year deal. I don't believe that those numbers are available yet, but I think in an earlier conversation, you thought or you guessed that it might be somewhere 2 years, 5 to 6 million.
Yeah, that's what I'm figuring. I think it'll be less than Darby's deal. Darby has more of a pedigree. Darby's an outside guy as opposed to Millett being more of a slot guy. So that maybe it goes to seven. Maybe it's 2 years, 7 million. But I think it'll come in under the eight. What about eight? Was eight and a half? I think was Darby's deal. So I think it's going to come in less than that. Also, because he's on the market an extra week, so to speak. And right now, I mean, honestly, right now, not many players are getting 2-year deals or only getting 1 year. So and who knows how that'll be structured. It could be structured to be a 1-year deal, but 2 years on paper. So we'll have to see. I mean, the PA's been very slow posting these kinds of things. So who knows when we might see those details. It's not a big deal. Because if it's a big deal, then the agent is out there trumpeting the numbers. But in this case, that's not happening. So I don't think he broke the bank or anything like that.
Chris Board signs with the Ravens yesterday. His job, I mean, he's just basically taking the place of Delshon Phillips, who signed with the Texans a 1-year deal, $2.6 million. Talk a little bit about, do you know anything about Chris Board's deal right now?
No, nothing on that either. I would think that would be less than a 2.6. There might be some incentives in the deal, so maybe it's 1.75 or in that range, with some incentives. It might take him over 2.6 if he sees a significant amount of snaps on defense. He was released by New England, and he had signed a 2-year deal. So he had with New England, he had signed a 2-year, $5 million deal. He made it through 1 year of that, and then they cut him. So I can't imagine that. I don't see him getting over 2.5 million if that was the average on his deal. And New England cut him, and New England is swimming in cap space, so this wasn't a situation where they cut him because they needed cap, they needed cap room. This is this is a new coach too, so obviously that factors in. I would think I think he'd be in the 1.5 to 2 range probably. If that, he might even be just a veteran minimum deal, which would be just a little over a million.
You kind of sensed that it was going to be a signing of this kind of nature just to shore up special teams, because I think most people would agree that the Ravens special teams had a little off year in 2023. So signing Board to be that special teams guy, probably one of their aces, and also an inside linebacker to spell Trenton Simpson as it stands today.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Phillips was that guy last year. He did play some, you did see some snaps on Dan Board did here when he was in his last 2 years as well. So yeah, I think, I think they probably, and Board is probably their, back fallback to Phillips. I think they probably would have liked to have Phillips back, but 2.6 mil might have been, I mean, he was signed a veteran minimum deal last year. So I wasn't expecting him to get much more than that this year. So the 2.6 is quite a jump for Phillips. So I think that, they want a guy in that, minimum-ish 1 to 1.75 mil range, somewhere in that area for that role. So since Phillips got priced out of that board, I think is a pretty good fallback.
Ravens offensive line, the head coach John Harbaugh and the GM Eric DaCosta both on record saying they were going to rebuild this offensive line. But as it stands right now, only two of the five starters remain on the team. The Ravens lose John Simpson to the Jets in free agency. They traded Morgan Moses to the Jets, picked up a draft position in the fourth and an extra pick in the sixth. Not a bad trade, but they're left with guys that are unproven as of right now, and there's not a whole lot in the marketplace. And then when you throw on the fact that Kevin Zeitler signed with the Detroit Lions, a one-year deal that's reported at $6 million, but who knows what kind of incentives are included in that. That seems real cheap to me for Kevin Zeitler, the way I thought he played in 2023.
Yeah, I would agree. But obviously, I mean, and guards were getting paid this year, and obviously he's on the, he's on the, higher end of the age scale, I guess. But guards can play, a lot of guards can play pretty well into their mid-30s. So, yeah, I was surprised by that. I'd really be curious to know, I mean, he said he wanted to be back. The Ravens talked about him being back. And then obviously that void deadline for his contract came up in January, and it didn't happen. I don't know whose evaluation was wrong. I can't believe the Ravens wouldn't have wanted him at 1 year or at 6 million a year. I think they probably would have done more than 1 year. I mean, last year's, I think it was 7.5, his prior 3 year contract averaged 7.5. So coming off a Pro Bowl year to go from that to just a $6 million base deal, that's a bit shocking all around. So I don't know if, once the Ravens had to take on the $4 million in dead money because the contract voided, if the ship had sailed at that point for them and they moved on. I don't know. I'm, somebody, I almost have to think that. Because, like I said, if Zeitler had said I'll sign for $6 million a year back in February before his contract voided, I can't imagine they wouldn't have jumped on that. So, and I this is only speculation on my part. I have no idea, but I think I feel like somebody on his side, on Zeitler's side, must have miscalculated the market, because 1 year, $6 million is not his worth, in my opinion. But as we've seen, pretty much it's 1 year deals at this point. And he wasn't get maybe wasn't getting the multi-year offers he wanted, so he took the best 1 year deal he could get to try and hit the market again next year. But I think it's a shame for him, because I don't think anybody thought this would be the kind of deal he'd end up with.
Yeah, he's a good teammate. He's a warrior. He plays hurt. And, he's just the guy you want to have on your team. And he played at a Pro Bowl level in 2023. So I don't know. I know that he had that knee issue towards the end of 2023. I'm wondering if that might be the where there's smoke, there's fire kind of thing with him, and maybe some teams backed off. I don't know. Just a guess.
Yeah, I mean, it could be, but I mean, I certainly agree with you. I mean, he kind of defines what a Raven is. And unless they were just re really, truly ready to move on and figured between their three young guards that they've got the position and maybe a mid-round draft pick, I don't know, that they've got that draft or that position solved. I don't know, solved is not the right word, but fully manned. I don't know. That one's a little mind-boggling to me, but they may have taken the approach, once those void years hit and we can't stretch this money out, that it, you're going to count too much on the cap no matter what you sign for here. I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough for us on the outside of the building looking in because they all know what the master plan is. We don't. So sometimes, as you're putting a puzzle together, you put it together when you recognize the pieces. But when we don't know what the puzzle even looks like, it's hard to really speculate on why they make such certain moves and why they don't make others. But that's the way it is when we're outside the castle, Brian, and that's why. You're the master when it comes to this, when it comes to working the salary cap. So I did want to remind everybody that we're sponsored by ROFO, and every day at ROFO is Friday. What that means, Western fries, almost as world famous as their chicken. A small order is just $2, medium sized or large order is $3, and the family size is just $5. That's at ROFO. Friday is every day. Right through April 30th. So I want to talk a little bit about the current salary cap situation. And I know there's some particulars with the Ronnie Stanley deal, basically a pay cut that I wanted you to dive into if you could. But right now, as it stands, Brian, based on your chart, there's $13 million roughly in cap space. And as you point out in your piece on Twitter and on Russell Street Report, that $13 million is really earmarked for things like in-season additions in the event of an injury, maybe gives them some flexibility in season if they want to make a trade. Rookie signings, of course, the practice squad, and then there's the adjustments to the Rule 51. Am I missing anything else?
Oh, that's pretty much it. So those future expenses probably are about 15 million. Now that cap number, that projected cap number that I have in that chart has ch will change once we find out Millett and board's numbers. I don't think it's gonna, I mean, so it might change it by about 3 million and reduce it by about 3 million. I don't think it's gonna be much more than that because as those guys are added to the cap, two players will fall off under the rule of 51 and they're just under 800,000. So that offset will eat into whatever the cap numbers are for Bohr and Millett. So I'm just say around 3 million. So I mean, they can, they don't need to make cap space at this point to sign anyone because those are future expenses. They'll just need that money and that cap space available down the road. I mean, they still, to our knowledge, have not restructured Lamar Jackson. That's 11, a little over $11 million. And then Roquan Smith and Marcus Williams are also candidates as well, as is Mark Andrews. Now, Mark Andrews was due a $4 million roster bonus Friday, last Friday. Or Saturday. So that was either paid or they restructured his contract then. That'll take us a few days to know. But if they did pay that, then restructuring him, which originally would have been about 5 million, is only about 3 now, because he was paid $4 million. And you can't rest once that bonus is paid, that can't be restructured. So that's one of those things that, will to be determined, but they certainly have options and avenues to create cap space if and when they need it. Like I said, I still expect Lamar to be restructured at some point because he's in the first year of his deal. That's what happens with quarterback contracts. And while it is going to increase his later year cap numbers, which are already high, those probably won't matter because he'll be extended before then. I mean, that's just the way quarterback contracts. That's just what happens with quarterback contracts, unless they out and out stink. And coming off of MVP year, I'm not sure we're worried about that.
Now, you broke the news on the particulars on the Stanley pay cut, essentially. And, I think you got some good credit from 105.7 The Fan and some different podcasts around. Talk about that for the benefit of our listeners. What happened with Stanley and what kind of space that freed up on the Ravens cap?
Sure. So That was basically it. It reduced his, he was due 15 million in compensation in cash this year, between an $11 million bonus, and I'm sorry, $11 million salary and a $4 million roster bonus. They reduced that cash basically in half. So now he's due a $3 million base salary, $1 million roster bonus, and then they're using, which they've just started using in the last couple of years, per game roster bonuses. So, and that there's 500,000 worth of that. So if he plays, he gets paid, I think it's like 29,000 a game. And if he doesn't, if he's not on the active roster that week, he doesn't get paid. So that's a, you know, that's a good thing to use for a guy that's you know, had an injury history. I think the first person they used them with that's actually really come into play was Jadeveon Clowney last year. And obviously he had come off of years where, you know, he was playing 12 or 13 games, but not 16 or 17, depending upon the year. They did have some in some other players' contracts, but they never reached those years. So I've never had to account for them. They're kind of a pain to account for. But that's so I'm not real thrilled about them using them, but I understand their logic for sure. They don't have to worry about my feelings. So, so they reduced that in cash, and then the way it was structured, so they reduced it. He took half of what he was supposed to get in cash, and that saved them a little over 9 million against the cap, which is huge. And that's why they haven't had to restructure anybody at this point, because that was a huge cap savings. They did add, which is a big number, but 10 million in incentives, none of which count against this year's cap. So those all would be statistical categories that he didn't reach last year. We have not seen any reporting on those yet. I'll be interested to see what those are, because you know, with a lineman, there's only so many things: the snaps, starts. And then kind of team performance, things based on the team performance. It's not like you know, with a running back or receiver, quarterback, where you have yards and touchdowns and receptions and, you know, carries and things like that. So, so it'll be interesting to see how those are. So he could, I mean, if he has a healthy year, starts every game this year, then, you know, there's a good chance he's going to earn a lot of that 10 million back. That'll hit next year's cap. Yeah, so I mean, you know, it works. It's, you know, I'm surprised at how much they were able to get the cut. I was thinking if they got down to eight, you know, that would have been amazing. So that would have saved seven, but they saved 7.5 in cash, but as far as the structure of the deal, saving nine was what's where I was thinking they might get to eight, maybe. To get over nine was a really good job for them.
Well, I think it sends a good message in a lot of different ways. It says to the player, I think the structure is pretty much, hey, Ronnie, we still believe in you. You just have to play to the level you used to play at. And from the player's perspective, he's accepting that and saying, I'm going to do the best I can to get back to that level.
Right, and that's another key thing, and probably I mean, obviously the cap savings and all of that is important, but they removed, so he was under contract through next year, so through the 2025 season. They removed that from his deal, so he will be a free agent after this year, and that gives him every incentive to be as healthy as possible and play as well as possible, because he will be playing the 2024 season for his next contract. So I kind of like that as well. I mean, again, obviously run the risk. He turns in an all pro year and he's not under contract next year. And, you know, you might look back at that and say, oh, you know, wish we hadn't done that. But by the same token, if you don't give him this incentive to have the best year of his career, so to speak, or one of the best years of his career, you know, maybe he's here under contract next year, but you don't want him because he didn't have that all pro-ish year, so to speak. So I mean, I think it works out for everybody. If he plays well, he can go demand what he wants on the open market, which drives up the price generally. I mean, it's theory. Now he'll be 31 next year, so it'd be a bit surprising, but I guess in theory, unless they put a prohibition against the Ravens using the tag in the deal, which of course is possible. You know, he could be tagged next year if he did turn in an all pro year. But I mean, I don't think anybody's expecting that. But, you know, 75% of Ronnie Stanley's best year would be more than I think they'd be more than happy with next year.
So the targets you not targets, but potential moves that they can make to create cap space. And it seems like they're not going to do it until they have to. They've got money to spend right now or to carry forward, as you suggest, into the season for in-season expenses. But when you look at the guys that are potentially restructured candidates, they you add that up, and those candidates would be Lamar, Marcus Williams, Roquan Smith, and Mark Andrews. That's somewhere in the $25 million range.
Yeah, again, it's a little less than that because that was done before Andrew. That chart was done without calculating in that Andrews would get paid his $4 million. So so now that we're past that deadline, assuming that happened, that roster bonus was paid, it would drop that number by about $2 million. But yes, I mean, they have the flexibility, and I mean, it's you know, right now it's a good thing because they will need to dip into that sum for sure. But so far they haven't had to dip into that, and they've got, you know, a decent amount of space to do some signings still. Obviously I think Jadeveon Clowney is probably the next big domino that, you know, everybody's, you know, waiting to see if they can get him back. He's kind of doing his world tour right now. He seems to be making a lot of stops, but that's either him being very meticulous, I guess we'll say, and looking at his offers, or nobody's given him the offer he wants, so he's going on to the next place and the next place, which would also say that the Ravens haven't given him the offer he wants either at this point. But he's also a guy who for a couple of times now has gone into the late spring, early summer unsigned. So he doesn't seem like he now, granted, he signed for a song last year here in the Ravens. He might have waited too long in that case. But in this case, I don't think he's going to have to wait that long because of the year he had this past season. But he certainly seems to be a guy who's comfortable in waiting for his best offer as opposed to just jumping at something to say, I'm signed and I'm done.
Yeah, when I think of the Clowney situation and given his history and given the Ravens' patience with all this, and then looking at some of the things that have happened to Ravens players in the past where they let guys go out to the market and they came back and they ended up staying with the Ravens, it would not shock me, and I'm spitballing here, but it would not shock me if they said to Clowney, go out and find the best deal you can before you do anything, let us know, because maybe they had a hard time defining what his market value is, so they let him go out and make that happen, define it himself through his own efforts, and then come back to them. And then on top of that, as you sort of alluded to, Clowney is a guy that doesn't race to get to training camp, never has been, right? So why not drag this out for a little while, and then he doesn't have to show up to OTAs and can show up by middle of training camp and have a deal and get back to business with the Ravens, whatever that deal would be. So that wouldn't shock me either because that's kind of his MO.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, the longer you go, though, the money is, and to an extent, you know, the money is gone. When Leonard Floyd signed his contract, and he got it seemingly isn't official yet, but, you know, he agreed to terms on a 2-year, $20 million deal up to $24 million. I kind of thought he was a pretty good indicator of Clowney, because he's actually older than Clowney. He's been more, well, I guess he's overall been more productive, you know, the last and consistent, I guess. So, I mean, he's played in 16 or he's played in every game since his second year in the league. So, 17 or so 2018, 19, 2020, 21, 22, and 23, he's played in every game. He's the last 4 years, he's 10 and a half, 9.5, 9 and 10.5 sacks. So he's been very consistent, more so than Clowney. But I figured that was kind of would have been Clowney's ceiling. So, you know, if that's the $10 million, the $12 million based on incentives, then Clowney's probably the 8 to 10, 7 to 9 range per year. But you know, that money runs out. So I would think we'll hear something in probably in the next week, or by maybe even by the end of this week. Well, today's Wednesday now, but you know, I would think by certainly this time next week that'll be resolved, because I don't think he's the money dries up to an extent. And you know, we've already seen that with guys just getting 1 year deals. So but that's what I would think he'd be aiming for. But I think he'd come in a little under what Houston got, even though Houston is about 2 years older.
You mean Floyd?
Floyd, I'm sorry, Floyd. I always get those two guys confused. So yes, Leonard Floyd, sorry.
But it's nice to see that they have the flexibility with, and I think most of those restructure candidates, Jackson, Williams, Smith, and Andrews, depending upon if Andrews has done or not already, they're all good restructure candidates. I would say the one I'd have the biggest question about would be Williams because of his recent injury history, although he didn't have that prior to coming to Baltimore. But Lamar and Roquan and Andrews, I think those are solid restructure guys that you don't have to worry about too much if they're going to play to the level of their pay and have to like cost them money on the cap later on.
Yeah, for sure. Andrews, probably the only concern with Andrews is next year, 2025, is the last year of his deal. So that's going to raise, but his cap numbers are actually relatively sane, I guess we'll say, even next year. So yeah, I mean, I don't think that's going to be, I mean, his cap number, yeah, this year and next year presently is a little under 17 million. So if you restructured him, that would put that would put next year's cap number for him pretty high, closer to 20 million. So that might be something you'd want to avoid there. But you know, so maybe it was worth paying him the bonus this year, and they can still restructure him and get, you know, the 2.9 instead of 4.9 in savings, because that they feel like that's enough. And again, that's not pushing as much into next year as they would be if they restructured them before this, or before paying that bonus.
Other than Clowney, I don't know about you, but I don't really see a whole lot out there in the marketplace that is worth spending, what I would define as a splash signing. Am I missing something?
No, I don't think there really is. You know, well, I mean, I guess one, now he's coming off of injury. Xavien Howard out of Miami, the corner, I think is probably the next best, if you want to talk about top free agents. I did see somebody's list this morning, and I think Clowney was one and he was two. But beyond that, no. I mean, and Howard coming off of injury, and I guess I think he's 30 now as well. So I don't think he's going to break the bank either. Kendall Fuller for the Commanders just signed with Miami, I think. I think he replaced, basically replacing Howard. And I think his deal averaged 8 a year. It was 2 years, 16 mil. So, but yeah, I think that's, I mean, I think we're probably, you know, we're into the third wave, even though we're only a week into, you know, just barely a week into free agency, technically, but we're already kind of in the third wave of free agency. So, you know, the next wave will come after the draft, when teams sign players or draft players and then get rid of veterans, now that they have, you know, the first round draft pick to plug in for an aging veteran or something like that.
Yeah, I was thinking about trades around the draft time in Ravens history, and the two that came to mind, I don't know if they were during the draft, the day of the draft, day before the draft, something to that effect, was when the Ravens made a trade to get McNair with the Titans. And then prior to that, or after that, they traded with the Cardinals to get Bolden. And I think that that was near a draft day trade.
Yeah, McNair actually came in June. It had been talked about from the draft, but Tennessee held on to him till June for cap reasons, because they traded him after. I think they were holding him. Now, maybe it didn't go all the way till June, because they had to lock him out of the facility and stuff, and it didn't go over well around the league. I think the biggest trade, well, Bolden was one. But I think, you know, the Sam Adams was the morning of the draft back in 2000. And that one will go down in history, really, because what it allowed them to do, at least based on the stories that have come out, and that was they were going to draft Corey Simon, the defensive tackle, at because they were at 5 and 10 that year. And then they were going to hope Jamal Lewis lasted till 10. Instead, once they signed Sam Adams that morning, they didn't need Corey Simon. So they drafted Jamal at 5. And I think two running backs went right after him. So he probably would not have made it till 10. And obviously, those were two big pieces of that first Super Bowl team.
I always think about Jamal and wonder what he would look like in a Lamar Jackson-led offense. That would be amazing.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of what they're envisioning with Derrick Henry. Maybe not a 25-year-old Jamal, so to speak, but I think that's kind of what they're envisioning here.
Yeah, I agree. And then when you mentioned, we talked about McNair. Funny story. I was at one of the OTAs his first season when he reported, and I'm standing next to Mike Preston, and we're watching them practice. And his practice was so bad that Billick actually made them run wind sprints. It was that bad. And I remember Derek Mason being out there, pissed off about running them, but not really pissed off at the coaches. He was pissed off at his teammates for how, terrible that they looked that day. But McNair looked awful. I mean, his passes looked like wobbly punts. It was terrible. And I remember turning to Mike Preston, and I said, "You're the best looking quarterback out there today. Unfortunately, is Kyle Bowler." And he said to me, "Who's going to write about that, me or you?"
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, McNair was never had a perfect spiral, that's for sure. But yeah, so he wasn't traded till June 7th. So there was talk about it, the draft, and it sounded like it almost, if my recollection is, it almost came together in the draft. But they held on to him and held on to him, and I think the Ravens only sent a fourth round pick, so I don't think it really got them much by holding on to him that long. But yeah, but there was, I mean, I remember there was discussion definitely during that draft to that the Ravens really tried hard to get him draft day.
Anything we've left out, Bry?
No, I think that's pretty much it. Yeah, not a whole lot. I mean, I don't expect a whole lot to happen. Probably till the draft at this point. So we got a month. There'll be some minor signings here and there, I guess. But for the large part of the Clowney obviously being, Clowney or Van Noy, I guess, being guys that, I don't know that they bring them both back, but if Clowney goes, will they, bring Van Noy back sooner? It seems like Odell Beckham Jr., that ship has sailed. Obviously it doesn't preclude them from turning around and going back, but then again, minor signings, Darrell Worley maybe, another running back, Kevon Seymour at corner, but those aren't going to affect the cap much at all. But yeah, I think we're going to probably hit that dead time as teams, go towards the draft and say, there's five guys out there that are equal that I can sign for the relative minimum, but I'm going to see what I draft first and then circle back and see who of these guys are left and go after them at that point.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be a good approach, actually. You never know what's going to happen on draft day. Players do fall to you. And just look back at 2022 when Kyle Hamilton and Linderbaum fell to them. So,
Yeah, and I don't think they were expecting to draft a safety and a center with their two first round picks going into that day, I imagine.
right.
But
Those are positions that aren't drafted oftentimes in the first round.
right. But they were obviously, by year two, we're quite happy that they did.
And we'll take two more of those this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, all right, well, that's it for the front office today. Brian, I will be back again at it next Wednesday. Thanks to all who've listened, and special thanks to Royal Farms, Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast.